back. Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you so much for tuning in, friends, new and regular listeners. It's good to have you with us, as always. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I'm from Sweden, and on this program, we discuss a whole host of topics that we find engaging, interesting, and, of course, important on the website, redicecreations.com, and also redice.radio.net. We have much more for you. And for our entire archives of radio films, videos, and more, check out redicemembers.com. Go there to sign up. Our guest today is Erik Karlström. He's from Colorado in the U.S. He's a professor of geography at California State University. In addition to teaching physical and environmental geography courses, he has also taught courses cross-listed with the geology department and an honors course called State of the World, the Environmental Perspective. He's also written extensively about the more unknown aspects of the globalists and the New World Order. We are going to talk about the New World Religion today, where the New Age intersects with the environmental movement, such as Agenda 21 and some of the future goals of the globalists. We'll also dissect the different factions of the establishment and the parasite involved in the subversion of society and mankind. Erik Karlström, welcome back to the program. It's great to speak with you again. Hope you've been doing well since we last spoke. It's been a couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, Henrik, and I appreciate being able to join you for the program. And, yeah, it has been a while, and, of course, we both hopefully learned a lot since then, and maybe we can touch base on some of the high points in our discussion today, which I really look forward to based on our past programs.
Exactly, me too. It has indeed been a couple of years, more than that, I believe. I think, was it 2011 you were with us?
I'm not sure about the date, but yeah, maybe somewhere in there, 2012, maybe.
Exactly, something like that. The years just are flying by. It's amazing. Man, we have learned a lot along the way, of course, pushing forward into analyzing the elite, trying to figure out what happens, who's pushing the world in what direction, for what reason, all this stuff, right? And you've written and done a lot of good work on, you know, the New World Order religion of where all of this is going, basically, in terms of a kind of a ideological basis, both of the elite itself, but then at the same time, kind of what they're pushing, you know, onto us. And I think we talked a little bit about this at the end of our last conversation, but let's kind of really pick up there and talk more about this. We talked about Crestone, you know, Baca, this interesting place. Why don't we begin there geography-wise and tell us, and give a little bit of background on this, Erik.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually a recently retired geography professor. I taught about 30 years. My field was physical geography. But during the last 20 years of that 30 years, I was teaching a course called Human Ecology at California State University, Stanislaus. And that I was a very interesting course to teach, although at first it was very depressing because I would just, you know, go out of the textbook and talk about the litany of environmental problems that are making us supposed to go home and, you know, shoot ourselves in the head for being human beings. The second 10 years I taught that course, I started reading the right-wing critique of the environmental movement and realized that they were right. So, you know, I'm not sure that the university was happy with the direction it went. But then, of course, September 11th came along, and shortly thereafter, I started a website called 911nwo.com. And I've also got my naturalclimatechange.us website, and that's very close to my actual training and field, which is in physical geography, soils, geomorphology, climatology, etc. The politics angle I've really brought into my human ecology class consistently, so I've been studying this now for quite a while. And then in 2008 I had a sabbatical, and I got into the issue that presented itself here in our little San Luis Valley, which was that a Canadian gas exploration firm called Lexam Incorporated wanted to drill three 13,000-foot gas test wells through one of the largest freshwater aquifers in North America, which just happens to be right next to the desert. So the calculated value of that aquifer, you know, is in the trillions. Depending on, of course, where you sell it. If you sell it in an urban area where they're spending, you know, upwards of, you know, $20,000 an acre foot, it could certainly be worth well into the trillions. So those are three of my websites, and then the fourth is my ericcarlstrom.com website, which deals with the music that I have always done as an avocation, and now I'm actually trying to make money at it, realizing now that it's a good thing I probably didn't do that for a living. It's hard to make money, but it is a wonderful pastime and vocation. So anyway, with that said, my background is as a professor and as a physical geographer. But in 1994, I bought some land in Crestone Baca, southern Colorado, right in the southern Rockies physiographic province between the Sangre de Cristo Mountains and the San Juan Mountains, where we have a high agricultural valley that's about 7,000 feet. And as I say, structurally, it's a graben. So there's a series of rock units or blocks that have been downdropped about 13,000 feet, and that has filled up with water over the years. The top 2,000 feet, at least, is potable, and so this is an enormously valuable aquifer, which, although we've had drought for the last 20, 30 years, has, you know, it's still sitting there. So, that said, I live in a small town, Crestone Baca, 1,500 people. It's right on the flanks of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, overlooking the San Luis Valley. It's quite beautiful right now. It's almost like living in Alaska. We have 1.9 people per square mile here in Sawatch County.
Oh,
and
nice.
In Alaska, they have 1.2 people per square mile. And in Wyoming, which is the next least crowded state, they have 5.5 people per square mile. So it is almost like living in Alaska in the sense of it's a frontier kind of place.
Right.
Ranchers out in the valley, not that many people. But what's interesting about it, of course, is number one, we have this enormously valuable aquifer, which is number two, we've got 76% of Sawatch County as public land in the form of the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve, the Baca National Wildlife Refuge, the Sangre de Cristo Wilderness areas around just behind my house, National Forest, Bureau of Land Management. We got an awful lot of public land here, of course, rural America is under the gun from soft law policies from Agenda 21.
Yeah.
That's the United Nations Agenda 21, written by Maurice Strong and presented at the 1992 Rio Earth Summit. This series of soft law policies that were adopted immediately in 1992 in 179 countries includes, of course, the Convention on Climate Change, which was not ratified, the Convention on Biodiversity, which was also not ratified, and had it been ratified, it would have called for a fairly rapid removal of human beings from rural areas in America so that the Agenda 21 could get their, Agenda 21 map of death with 50% of America off limits to human beings. This was kind of put together in the Wildlands Project of Dave Foreman and Earth First and a bunch of wildlife biologists who wanted to save the elk at the expense of the humans.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, if you don't mind, just with that brief geographical sketch, Henrik, let me just read to you a little portion of a speech that got me going on the project that I've been working on for 3.5 years now.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center, who has been a consistent critic of Agenda 21, bless his heart, and still is, made a speech to a conservative policy action conference in 1996 called The Most Dangerous Man in the World. And he was referring to billionaire Canadian businessman and United Nations potentate Maurice Strong, who actually owned the Baca Ranch here and who, with his wife Hannah, set up the Manitou Foundation he set up the American AWDI, American Water Development Incorporated, back in the late 80s, this Canadian billionaire, environmentalist, quote-unquote, savior of the planet, got a consortium of his friends in the late 80s, and they tried to, he owned the water because he owned the ranch above it, an old Spanish land grant called the Juan Maria Luis Baca, about 12 miles on a side, which takes up right plunked right in the middle of the San Luis Valley. So he tried to export that water to Denver and make another billion. His AWDI was not successful, and he was more or less defeated by a consortium of environmentalists and local ranchers who did not want to see these guys take the water and send it to Denver.
Yeah.
So anyway, that story has been told in many books, including a book called The Last Ranch by Sam Bingham in the mid-80s. But anyway, here's what Tom DeWeese says about this interesting person, Marie Strong. Marie Strong is the number one force behind UN environmental policy. Marie Strong is the leader of a radical contingent of environmentalists that believe that technology and modern industrialization must be stopped. Radical Greens believe that all of man's activities on Earth are harmful and therefore not sustainable. Save the Earth, kill yourself kind of thing.
Yeah.
They believe that man is a cancer on the Earth. Their goal is to slowly cut back and finally reduce human habitat to specific areas while the rest of the world is turned into wilderness. Marie Strong and his buddies are the driving force behind a New Age pagan religion known as Gaia. That's referring to the Earth Mother Goddess of Greek mythology, and also James Lovelock's Gaia hypothesis, which is that the Earth itself is somehow sentient. And it is pure nature worship. The Strongs own a 63,000-acre ranch in Colorado known as the Boca Grande. Boca Grande, Strong believes, is the Vatican City of the New World Order. Okay, there's where I get my title for this investigative series called Is Boca Grande the Vatican City of the New World Order? And then he goes on to say, Marie Strong is also a director of the Temple of Understanding in New York City, where pagan rituals and earth-worshipping ceremonies include escorting sheep and cattle to the altar for blessing. Okay, so there's a reasonable place to start. It's this conservative, let me just add another little paragraph. What does Marie Strong have to do with American property rights? Everything. The assault on property rights, the entire radical environmental agenda, is being driven by the United Nations. And Marie Strong is the number one force behind UN environmental policy. So, this is really what got me launched into looking at these things. I just happened to be living here. I bought land here in 94, built a house here in 2000 because I love it. It's a beautiful area. It's like a poor man's Tetons. I think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
14,000 foot peaks are right above my house, and
nice.
It's a spectacular mountain front. But obviously these are big issues, and if people are driven off the land in rural America, then, of course, land has all the resources and all the wealth attached to it. That's water and minerals and forest products, et cetera, and agriculture. So if you can sever, get people off the land, which seems to be the goal of Agenda 21, soft law policy, which the United States signed on to under George H.W. Bush in 1992, the elite have weakened America to such an extent, and the world, this is a global program, but America is especially targeted, but the whole world is targeted. So that seems like a good place to start, Henrik. I'll let you tell, decide kind of what's the most interesting part to pursue here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a lot to chew on there, of course, a lot of intricacies of that, but I think it's important to point out the idea that they want to drive people off the land, because piggybacking on this issue is of course, the issue of depopulation, and you know, what consequently would end up happening is that majority of people would then be driven off, you know, rural places into the cities, where understandably you would develop a sentiment that the world is overcrowded, because frankly, when you go to these major cities and hubs, I mean, I agree with them, it feels like it's completely overcrowded. There's way too many people on a way too small of an area, and of course, you know, I think that this is what actually is creating a lot of, you know, problems and issues as well for people. They're not living in touch with nature, which is kind of strange, isn't it? Because when you think of what you just explained here with their, you know, Temple of Understanding, and you think that there would be a nature-driven ideology, but in reality, it kind of isn't, at least not for the people that they're trying to implement this on. They're trying to drive them into these huge metropolis areas where basically mankind is going to be completely detached from nature. So it's kind of contradictory in its ideology, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. There's an enormous cynicism involved in all of this. people are fooled and duped into often, you know, well, the psychologists say that 4% of the human population are psychopaths and don't feel guilt for criminal activity, but the other 96% are good, decent people for the most part, and they want to help. But the New Age movement, which we'll get into in a little while, dupes people into draconian policies, much like Nazism. This is the conclusion of Constance E. Cumbie in two books that she wrote about the New Age movement, you know, which talks about a master race and Homo Noeticus or Homo Novus, the new species of superior humans, and then the others are going to have to be wiped out. And of course, this plan for mass genocide of inferiors, it tracks along with theosophy, tracks along with the New Age movement, tracks along with the United Nations, which is involved in theosophy in the New Age movement, tracks along with Nazism, certainly it tracks along with Judaism, because all of these things are informed by the Jewish Kabbalah and Talmud, because at their head they've been formed by these ideologies of a superior race and an inferior race, etc. Let me just read, if I could, here, Henrik, a little bit more about this situation, this place, and this person, Marie Strong, because Marie Strong is the key. John Coleman, the British intelligence agent with a PhD in political science, who's written many books about the Tavistock Institute and the Committee of 300, et cetera, the Masons, he says Marie Strong is one of the Committee of 300 that rules the world. That puts him in the league with the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, or in their company. And he says, this democraticunderground.com website says, the Strong say they see the Baca, which they call the Valley of the Refuge of World Truths, as the paradigm for the entire planet, and say that the fate of the Earth is at stake. Apparently, the Kissingers, the Rockefellers, the McNamaras, the Rothschilds, and other establishment New World Order elites all agree as well, for they do their pilgrimage to the Baca. They come here. Hmm. They have, anyway, mm-hmm. where politics and the occult, the New World Order, and the New Age all merge. Baca Grande also appears to be a magnet for military attention and reputedly is an active site for observing both UFOs and spiritual manifestations. Okay, so with that, we've got it all here. This is the mysterious valley. Christopher O'Brien has written three books about this. Lots of sightings of UFOs and paranormal activity, which I think, and I make the case in my paper that this is mostly military, the mind control stuff,
right.
Masking behind the UFO fraud. So,
let me ask you this, Eric. Do you think that this then is basically largely propped up as a kind of a fantasy in order to create a kind of a new religion, basically?
Yeah, you're cutting right to the chase. Okay, so the story picks up here when Marie Strong is kicked out. Ostensibly, he sold the ranch, the Baca land grant, one of the Spanish land grants, 12 miles on a side. He sold it to another local guy named Gary Boyce. He took part of the profits, $1.2 million, and he set up the Manitou Foundation, which also had donations from Lawrence Rockefeller and Robert O. Anderson of ARCO. And the Manitou Foundation then has been run ever since 87 or 88 when it was formed, I think 87, by his wife, Hannah, who's from Denmark. And she's mostly here, and they've kind of parted ways, but they're still married, I understand. But anyway, so they carved off a beautiful piece of land right at the base of the Sangre de Cristos, overlooking the San Luis Valley, actually very near where my house is.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started granting pieces of land to spiritual groups from all over the world. We have a whole number of Tibetan Buddhist temples and retreat centers. We've got Carmelite Catholic retreat hermitage. We've got a Hindu ashram. We've got a Muslim ziggurat. We've got Sufis. We've got Native American church stuff, although no Native Americans doing it. They're Anglos. But anyway, the idea is that this is the valley of the refuge of world truths, and all these religions are going to come together and get along, and out of that crucible, supposedly, I think, they think that the new world religion will emerge. Now, if we look a little bit at Freemasonry, which has always been a commandeered by Jews, and its essence is the Jewish Kabbalah, which is black magic and sorcery. Freemasonry has always wanted to put all the religions together in some kind of a syncretic universal world church, as did Helen Blavatsky of Theosophy, etc. So my thinking is, yes, this all these, you know, peace and love spiritual groups that we have here provide perfect cover for, I think, change agents, a.k.a. spies, to move in and out of our area at will. And I've been around here long enough to see many of them in action. I could name names, but of course I won't. So I think, like 9-1-1, like the global warming hoax, there's a beautiful cover story here. There's a Crestone magazine called all glossy covered, which looks beautiful and attracts idealistic types like me to the area, and people who want to make the world better and do spiritual, you know, development, etc. And then there's a movie called The Flame, which was made in 2013, which people can buy, I think, for $20, and they will see interviews of people from nine of the 32 spiritual centers we have. We have 51 nonprofits in Crestone Baca, and many of those are kind of educational centers. But our industry, if we have an industry, and we got one out of seven homes here for sale, so Crestone Baca is not doing well, and those houses aren't selling. And they're below market value.
Right.
And it's one of the most beautiful areas in the country. So something's wrong here. Something's impeding normal economic progress. And I think it is the hidden mission of Crestone Baca, which, of course, is what my 3.5 years of research and nearly 1,000 pages now on these in this investigative series is trying to figure out what's holding us back, what is the hidden agenda here, who is pushing it, and whatnot. So I've learned an enormous amount, not related to physical geography over the last 3.5 years. I don't claim expertise on the occult at all, except for what I've read in the last 3.5 years. But there is definitely that going on. And I think the refuge of world truths here is mostly a cover story, and most of the people here believe it. Still.
Yep, that's what happens. Most people kind of, you know, fall for it without analyzing it. And if it sounds good, that's the other thing too, right? If it just kind of, it sounds like peace and love, and, you know, there can't be anything wrong with that or whatever, that's where you get, you know, a lot of people hiding behind that. And I wanted to ask you about something specifically here when it comes to, you raised the issue of, like, let's say, you know, a super race or something like that, that they kind of have something in common with the National Socialists of Germany here. But it's not like these people are practicing eugenics, right? It's not like they're trying to create improve mankind to make them smarter and stronger, more intelligent, honorable, you know, kind of übermensch people here. I think it's quite the opposite, isn't it? It's almost like when you begin to analyze, for example, what the Rockefellers and these kinds of people have been doing, they're into dysgenics. They are, you know, promoting vaccinations of people, which, as we know, you know, gives a lot of autism to kids. They are pushing GMOs, bad food. They're pushing chemicals. They're behind a lot of these industries that are basically screwing up people's hormone systems, causing reproductional problems, etc. It seems that they're saying one thing, and again, I go back to that, but their actions is completely the opposite. How do you view that in terms of what they say when it comes to the improvement of humanity?
Wow. Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm just finishing up the 12th part, or the conclusions of this investigative series. Part 5, I believe, talks about a number of the kind of the intellectual social movements that underpin this this long-term plan for world takeover, which is principally Jewish. So I looked at the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. I looked at the Frankfurt School in Germany, and I looked at the, you know, long march of cultural Marxism of Antonio Gramsci, and right after World War II in the United States, a guy named Gregory Bateson, who's a British guy, 6'5" tall, an anthropologist who was married to Margaret Mead. He, Margaret Mead, and several other people presided over a series of conferences they called the Man-Machine Conferences, also called the Macy Conferences. And these are kind of famous now. But the guy who wrote the book that got it going, I think, was a Jew from South America, and he was envisioning kind of a Superman, which would be a melding of humans and technology.
Yeah, there you go.
Cyborgs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you've got this whole idea of the singularity, which maybe you've heard of.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
There's another Jew, I can't remember his name right now, but he's come out with this idea ever since the 60s, which is that there's going to be a point, and he puts it at 2040 or 2050.
Ray Kurzweil, yeah. Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah, Kurzweil. Yeah, it's Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says that, you know, there's going to be a time when machines, computers are more powerful than humans, and that we're going to be either their slaves or their food. Well, of course, that's a pessimistic worldview. But while we speak, I mean, the scientific progress has been just moving right along. And now we've got cloning of all kinds of critters. We even have crosses of various critters. And there are some Christian ministers. Now, I'm going to get kind of way out here, and I'm not going to say I know this for a fact, but there are some Christian ministers who have worked with a lot of the victims of satanic ritual abuse, MKUltra kinds of mind control programs that go back to the Nazis and go back to the Illuminati way before the Nazis. You know, now we're talking Joseph Mengele and all those terrible things that happened in the concentration camps. And they think that, we've got interspecies hybrids. They think that it's possible that the ruling elite wants to hybridize humans with demons. And they believe that in these processes of, say, satanic ritual abuse or MKUltra kinds of mind control programs where you torture children, especially younger than six, you split the personality into many, many alters because the child can't stand the pain. That's the only way they can survive, is they split off different identities, which can then be named and then cultivated and then triggered later. Well, according to lots of psychologists, demons can be installed. Now, whether or not you believe in demons, demonic personalities are installed. And this is unfortunately the reality behind, now see, I've got a whole other part on the history and methods of mind control. That's my part six. And that was a long, difficult, unpleasant year for me because I kind of went down into the ninth circle of hell in Dante's sense to analyze what our militaries have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got, according to some people, 10 or 20 million mind-controlled slave sleepers out there who can be triggered. So this all seems to fit into an occult agenda, which does have maybe to do with bringing forth, some biblical scripts such as Armageddon, Return of the Antichrist, and all that stuff. And so this stuff gets pretty hairy pretty quick. And this is why I'm kind of interested to get, talk about this, get some reality checks. I hope everything that I've done in here is basically a synthesis of other people's work.
Right.
So my work has been to synthesize the work of others and to try to, pick and choose what I think is most germane and pertinent here. But anyway, so to answer your question about the Superman and stuff, yes, I think it has to do with the melding of humans and technology, number one, and possibly humans and demons, the demonic realm. And this, again, throws us back into biblical scripts and, or biblical teachings or whatever you want to call it. I mean, I was a kind of a Buddhist when I started this program.
Right.
Now I think I'm leaning a little more towards Christianity, but because of this work. But anyway, so I think that, the ideology behind the Superman stuff here is a mixture of mind control and technology.
All right, there we go. Let me ask you a little bit more about the New Age religion and how you think that they're going to seek to implement this. I think it's something that's kind of taken shape, really, from what seems to be a grassroots movement. We know that there are a lot of, money behind this. There's been a number of, movies that have launched this more from a kind of a, grassroots, almost alternative movement into more New Age. I mean, it's been popularized by, Oprah, for Christ's sake, at this stage, and it's just kind of seeped into the mainstream more and more as we go. But tell us a little bit more about how you see this playing out and what they're seeking to benefit by pushing this New Age religion on us.
Well, absolutely. And this, see, this is, goes right back to Marie Strong and the United Nations and the Temple of Understanding and the Rio Earth Summit and Theosophy of Helen Blavatsky and Alice Bailey and just, and the Nazis, and so many movements converge in an ideology. It's like a, you know, a thousand-faced monster. When I look back now, I've got a lot of books here, and I have always been a book reader and book collector, and a large number of books in my library were books that I bought that are fairly new age, and I bought them because I thought those guys were really cool. You know? I mean, this stuff has always been really promoted, you know, and even to the point of, like, you know, I don't want to go through the titles or anything, but my heroes were new age people, and it was because the media puts these people up in front of us and has for our entire lives, as savants, as geniuses. Teilhard de Chardin is kind of the Jesuit priest who is one of the main New Age gurus, and there's many others. Across, it's a very international movement, so there's no one nationality that's overly represented. They're all you know, kind of adding to the mix. But yeah, the New Age movement is, if you look at the Rio Earth Summit, 1992, that Maurice and Hanna played such a major role in. Maurice was the Secretary General, and Hanna was there with kind of presiding over two main sub-conferences about the New Age religion. And they had, you know, Native American drummers, and they had rainforest Indians doing their dances, and they had, you know, many, many different versions of world spirituality. And some have said in some of my readings that this was all kind of to help sell the whole idea of sustainability, which is, you know, the environmental idea that we have to limit our use of resources to save stuff for the future, for generations in the future. And therefore, if our carbon footprint is too great, then we better, you know, die at the age of 50 so that the future will have enough. And this kind of idea. And which they have been pushing on children now for a long time. I think like a psychological war against children, because this is all propaganda and unproven assumptions. But so, yeah, there was the 1-2 punch of the New Age religions, which is all kinds of world religions mixed together, as if somehow if you mix everything together, it's going to come out with something that's coherent, which it doesn't.
No. Well, have you noticed too? Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, Eric, but have you noticed too that it's still very selective of all these movements I've been looking at and whatnot. None of them would ever, for example, have like, you know, kind of a representation of like Norse mythology or let's say Celtic or something like that. It's always very selective because see, they're pushing this thing now that, you know, we Europeans we're not native to anywhere, right? So we can't really belong to this kind of you know, indigenous kind of tradition that they're trying to fool us that this is the only thing that exists in the world. I at least have never seen any more kind of full on native European being pushed on any of these during these Earth summits or what have you. I might be wrong there. I'm not sure, but I've never seen that anywhere. So it seems still to be very, very selective. You know, it's not like they were trying to lift up ancient Anglo-Saxon culture, for example, right?
Well, that's true. Although there is a druidic component, certainly into the extent that it's satanic.
Mm-hmm.
Henrik had E. Michael Jones on your program.
Yeah, yeah.
Who wrote a fabulous book, which really 1,200 pages, which I read, and it's called The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History.
Yeah.
And this Catholic PhD. Has got a journal called Culture Wars. Anyway, he said what turned him onto this subject, what got him going researching this subject, because he didn't start from the position of criticizing the Jewish religion, so to speak. He said what got him realizing there was a problem was that looking at the Immigration Act in the United States of, 1954 or something, which made it very difficult for...
Yeah.
Was it 55?
65, yeah, definitely.
65,
yeah.
Which made it very difficult for Europeans to get in here, but made it very easy for brown-skinned people to get in here. Well, of course, the reason for that, according to E. Michael Jones and just about everybody I've read, is that the biggest single kind of cultural threat to the World Jewish Empire, which they've been working on putting into place for, you know, centuries and millennia, is white Christian culture, European culture.
Yeah.
So what they want to do always, of course, is divide and conquer. So having lots of different languages, lots of different religions, lots of different cultural identities all thrown together, you water things down to the point where there is no resistance. There's no credible coherent. Now, my background on my father's side is Swedish, and you're Swedish.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm pretty proud of that now, although since I grew up in America, it took me, you know, about 30 years to realize that it was, you know, something, you know, unique and to be proud of.
Yep.
Because you just kind of fit in when you just try to fit in. But there, of course, is one culture or one religion or whatever you want to call it, one tribe which has never assimilated here and will never assimilate because they want to take over everything, and that, of course, is the Jewish tribe. And they've got this long-term plan of considering themselves Chosenites and that everyone else is going to be their slave when their Messiah comes. And there's right in their Talmud, when our Messiah comes, every Jew will have 2,800 Gentile slaves. And, of course, you go right back to Deuteronomy when God says to the Israelis or the particular tribe, go in and take that city, I think it was Canaan, and if they will be your slaves, let them be your slaves, but if they won't, kill them.
Right.
God tells them to do that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the option for a Gentile in terms of the Jewish mindset. We can be their slaves, or we can let them kill us. And, of course, their own scripture says this should be by beheading. So, and now their holy scripture really is not the Torah. It's the Talmud and the Kabbalah.
Right.
The Talmud being something like 30 books of different laws by hundreds and thousands of different rabbis. And the Kabbalah being a system of black magic and sorcery that comes from Babylon and Egypt. And these two go together. So you've got the rabbis talking about, you know, this is permitted, that's permitted, and of course all the different rabbis have all the different ideas. But underlying that, you have the system of sorcery and black magic, which says that we created the universe. We created the world. We are gods, and we created gods, and we're smarter than gods, and God listens to the rabbis. So there's this an enormous arrogance, chauvinism, a conceit that goes along with this very, very toxic. Douglas Reed says Judaism is a political program disguised as religion. The political program is to take over the world, and it has been. And so, when you start reading older books, you realize this is the way it's been. And get back to your question: white Europeans have been the biggest threat to this power structure because they are resolute, honorable, strong, and they don't cave in. And
it is kind of a, really, when you look at it that way, it kind of is a supremacy of sort, but it's not the one that people would mistake from the National Socialist supremacy of Germany, then. It's quite the opposite, right?
Yeah, I think the master race thing somehow was grafted onto the National Socialists, but if you look deeply, now there's a number of books that say Hitler and his top guys were, you know, generally half were all Jewish. And the people that presided over the concentration camps were often Jewish. And the people that supported Hitler and built him up in the 30s, coming from Wall Street, they were Jewish. So if you look, and then if you look at the New Age movement and its similarities to Nazism, according to Constance Cumbie, and then you look at the New Age movement and its similarities to Judaism, according to Tex Mars, both of whom have written several books on the New Age movement, then you realize that Nazism and Judaism are just two sides of the same coin. And they were able to dupe the German people into going along with this satanic program.
Hmm. Yeah, I've heard a lot of that too. I don't know if I buy that anymore, but, you know, we have had a couple of interesting people on researchers that have actually tried to, you know, disassociate that and basically say, say differently and down some of the money trails and whatnot, but that's definitely something we can talk more about later. I don't want to get stuck in that conversation right now.
Yeah, this is a very controversial issue,
yeah,
and I'm still learning about it too. But yeah, there's full of surprises in this kind of research.
Yeah, it always is. Well, that's how it goes, right? You learn and you adopt and you move forward and you absorb new information. You try new things out, move in new territories. It's just how it goes with all this. But let's talk a little bit more about the co-option and the corruption of culture in Libya. You write more about this in your fifth chapter of how the controllers control us and how they managed to get to this stage. We kind of talked a little bit about this already, but I think someone like E. Michael Jones was actually very, he explained this very well in terms of how, you know, our culture have been very much co-opted and people mistake it for being ours when it really isn't anymore. We don't have any control of our, you know, stories anymore. We have a very powerful media and entertainment system that is very, how should I put this? It takes us away from what should be our own interests, I think. Well, what do you think about the entertainment industry and all this?
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, I personally don't have anything against Jews. I mean, I got Jews in my family, you know. So, I'm not going to sugarcoat the fact that the top people who have been driving this very, very evil system for millennia tend to have been Jewish, or as Jesus said in the Bible, those who say they are Jews and are not Jews and are the synagogue of Satan. And of course, that informs the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians and a whole host of secret societies. So much so that many of the books I've been reading say that, you know, we think we have a world comprised of 191 or whatever nations. But actually, for a long time, the system that runs the world is called synarchy, or rule by secret societies. And the secret societies are basically occult spinoffs of these types of societies I'm talking about, the Illuminati, which, of course, grafted itself onto Freemasons in 1782 at the Council of Wilhelmsbad and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, there is this counter tradition, which is pagan, occult, you could say satanic, which runs through our history, which has been mostly secret and suppressed. And there's guys like David Livingston. I think you interviewed him too.
Sure. Yeah.
That are starting to come out with this alternative tradition, which is occult. And I've always stayed way away from occult and magic because I thought it was really, you know, dumb, stupid. But it's also very powerful. And the forces that you're talking about, okay, well, you know, one of my colleagues here, friends, I guess you could say, in Crestone Baca, and I were going back and forth, and she was a psychologist as well as a 30-year Buddhist. And so I would enjoy our discussions because she had something to really discuss. We were beginning to realize that Crestone Baca is cult city. And we got lots of cults, and we've got a main over umbrella cult here, which is the whole town. And that, you know, through dissociation and double bind kind of situations that the spiritual groups put you through, and double mindedness and all those kinds of things, double think, Orwell called it, people start to kind of like withdraw like rats, you know. If you confuse a rat with too much stimulus, you know, or contradictory signals, you know, completely contradictory signals, it'll just withdraw and it'll go back into its shell, and then it won't be in a position to, you know, defend itself, for instance.
Yeah.
and I think you could make the case that the same thing is going on here, and that the religions are being used to do some kinds of mind control here. But this particular person was very much turning against Buddhism, because she'd been involved in Tibetan Buddhism, and she thought that the Tibetan Buddhist Rinpoches were, and the Dalai Lama were at the heart of the problem, and that was all connected to Hindustani, Hinduism and Brahmanic Hinduism, and this is the real power, corrupt power in the world. And I wrote back to her. I said, listen, you know, they don't own the media, they don't own the banks, they don't print the money out of nothing, they don't control the world leaders. No, it's a different culture, it's a different religion, it's a different tribe that controls all those social functions is not the Buddhists. It's, you know, it's the same group, the Jews. And, of course, yeah, the society we grew up in has become increasingly Judaized, and that has been the plans. The universal Alliance Israélite Universelle, which was, I guess, a kind of a group in France back in the 1860s. They have it in a number of their publications. We're going to take over all nations and all religions by infiltration, and we're going to turn them into what we are. In other words, we're going to infiltrate each of the countries and each of the religions until those identities are removed and our identity is the only identity remaining. This is an 1860 comment.
Wow.
And I can find it here somewhere. And of course, that's exactly what has happened. Interestingly enough, where we have all these different spiritual groups here in Crestone, we don't have any ostensible presence of the Jews. But in fact, all of the different religions have been Judaized to the point where there's no real significant difference. So this is another way of conquering things, isn't it? Through infiltration, through co-option, corruption, and then eventual destruction. And this has been, that's why the Jews have been expelled from 100 different countries in the past 2,000 years, because everywhere they go, they form a nation within a nation, a Trojan horse, fifth column, if you will, that subverts and tries to destroy the host nation. And this is who they are. This is what they do. And of course, that begs the question, what happens if they win and they destroy the host and all you have left is the parasite? Will the parasite be able to survive? I don't think so, because I think all their skills have been honed towards taking down the host. I don't think they can make that adjustment.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe that's what the Crestone experiment is partly about, because I think they have a very large presence here. And I think they are the on-the-ground managers of Crestone Baca.
Right, right.
And I know these people.
All right, yeah, okay. And have you, do you, are you able to, how should I put it, milk any information out of these? Or is there any way you've tried to kind of just talk with them about what they're doing, what their plans and goals are, et cetera?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think it has gotten to that point. I think, you know, maybe my less than skillful means are, I mean, I've in the past had lots of bumper stickers on the back of my Toyota truck, and one of them was No Jew World Order. So I think people around here got my political leanings, and I've of course been accused, you know, of being a conspiracy theorist and an anti-Semite.
Sure, sure.
Which of course are two terms that are meant to stop all thought and discussion.
Yeah.
So, and the few times that there would have been an opportunity to actually talk to people, in on my website there's a place where I feature a number of emails that flew around here during some of our many rancorous, heated political battles, which are way out of line for a peace and love community. And I put an email on there that actually I had written, although I was anonymous, I will admit to it, and I said, I think behind the Buddhocracy in Crestone is the Judocracy. And there is a book called The Jew and the Lotus, which talks about how Jews have taken over positions of leadership and become main teachers of Buddhism in the West. And I've been to teachings with the Dalai Lama and Dharamsala in Nepal. And sure enough, there are lots and lots of Jews there. You know, having audiences with the Dalai Lama, like I did. And at the time, I didn't think anything of it. But now I realize that that this is another religion which is controlled, infiltrated, and is being used.
Yeah, yeah. You know, another aspect of this, of course, is the how secret society is going to work underneath the radar and, you know, creating networks. And, of course, you do have... specifically because of Freemasonry, I think the structure is very, of course, similar to Judaism. There's a lot of people that pointed that out, but a lot of people, you know, can be from any religion there. It's just they, you know, they just want to have as many people as possible. They are a proselytizing secret society, despite that they claim that they're not. How does that tie into this, do you think, in the way that they managed to control and operate so many people? Because a lot of people on the world stage as well, that seems to be willfully along with this, doesn't necessarily have to be Jewish, right? But they still kind of play onto it. They believe maybe that they're doing something good ultimately. There's so many layers to this, of course. But Freemasonry specifically and other secret societies, what is the tie-in there, do you think?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, I just picked up a little book called World Freemasonry Unveiled. And I think this, I'm not exactly sure, I think it was coming out of Germany and recently reprinted. But I'll just read the first paragraph. Anyone wishing to understand the nature of Freemasonry must also have a handle on Jewry. Those who know Jewry will understand the dangers of Freemasonry. Freemasonry is an international organization headed by Jews with the aim to bring about Jewish world domination. Okay, that's the first paragraph. Basically, it's saying that Freemasonry is a Gentile front, largely, for Judaism, and they are the shock troops, which do enormous work and oftentimes don't even know who on whose behalf they are working. Because now you have, whatever, 33 degrees or maybe some super degrees, and each level then doesn't know what's going on above in the degrees above. And then they get initiated into higher levels where they get closer to the light, which, of course, is the light of Lucifer. But they don't know that until they get to the 30th degree. So it willfully and knowingly dupes the lower-level Masons. So you've got, you know, the blue degrees, the first 3 degrees, and those guys are just gradually being reoriented. Yes, they're told, come on in with any religion, but eventually they're told if they go high enough, this is the worship of Lucifer. Well, you know, Harold Rosenthal, the Jewish aide to Senator Jacob Javits, did a long interview in 1976, which is online, you could read it, and he says, towards the end, he says, well, most Jews don't like to admit it, but the God we worship is Lucifer. You know, and then, of course, what makes the interview so interesting is the contempt with which he speaks about Gentiles, you know, a bunch of goy dummies, you know, basically. And so it appears that there is this master race mentality, and that most of it's coming from this self-appointed chosen people.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of things here, of course, a lot of you know, different agendas kind of weaved into it, and we can see in the hierarchy that there's a lot of people that are trying to, you know, appeal to the elite, and they're trying to get their you know, way through it, and think they're going to end up on top or something. But yeah, I mean, when you begin to look at, you know, the players and what is going on and how things have been happening specifically in recent years, as you said, with, like, you know, the Frankfurt School and the way that they infested into academia and spread, you know, a lot of the, you know, kind of anti-Western sentiments too, they've actually turned a lot of people against themselves, against their own people or against their own, you know, nation. Then you can't help to think that, I wonder what's going on, you know, is it some kind of ethnic battle? Is it a tribal warfare that goes back, you know, perhaps, you know, hundreds of years, maybe even a couple of thousands of years? I don't know. It's difficult to say. Have you thought about that at all? What's kind of at the root of this? Is it just the prize of world domination and control, or do you believe that there is something supernatural? Is there something else going on here, Eric?
Well, I think it's very much both. You know, Douglas Reed was an English journalist who wrote a book called The Controversy of Zion in 1956, and he traces it back to about 600 BC. When the Jews were, quote-unquote, in their exile in Babylon, and, of course, that's when they learned the Babylonian Talmud, which was not written down until the 1st or 2nd century AD, but also when they learned the black magic system that was the Kabbalah. He said there was this Levite priests within the tribe of Judah and Benjamin that controlled the people by... Well, it was black magic, and enforced them or encouraged them or whatever to sacrifice their firstborn child so that they could get the favor of this deity that they worshipped, which obviously was not a beneficent deity. This was a demonic deity. And I think that this strain runs through the whole thing. Kevin McDonald talks about the Jewish tribe as having a survival strategy. Yeah, you could see this as one tribe trying to take over the whole world in a program that started 3,000 or 4,000 years ago and has kept its momentum somehow through human history. And Douglas Reed does a great job of breaking up the history of Zion into five elements. And there was that long period between 70 AD when, of course, their temple was destroyed by the Romans and the Communist Revolution, or the Communist Manifesto by Marx, who was a Jew turned Satanist. There was that long period when they were in the ghettos in Russia, Khazaria, Poland, etc. And the rabbis kept them there and kept them segregated and did not want them to mix with the unwashed, with the inferiors. And always this mentality that they had been, you know, persecuted all these Kahal, the Kahal was always kicked out with these pogroms, etc. Well, all of this is to maintain this Jewish mentality that they've always been persecuted, that they are better, and they're going to have to get everybody back. Now, when Theodor Herzl, who was head of the World Zionist Congress back in 1897 or something like that, was asked, and this was way before the formation of the Nation of Israel, he said, "Is Israel a nation?" And he said, "Well, if by nation you mean a group of people united by a common enemy, by hatred of a common enemy, yeah, then yes, we are a nation." And you have to understand that that means hatred of everybody else, of all non-Jews, of all
right.
Goyim.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what fuels this religion is hatred. Now, hatred is not an attribute of the God that I look up to.
Right.
But apparently it is an attribute of the God that they look up to. So I think, you know, you don't have to be have a PhD to see that maybe we're talking about, you know, different spiritual, supernatural realities.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know what you're saying, and there's, of course, an element of, well, you do have the division between the Old Testament and the Talmud, and then the New Testament, which is very different. There is, if you compare them, there's obviously a kind of a schizophrenia there and what have you. But let's see if we can talk a little bit more about that in the second. There's some other items here I want to ask you more about when it comes to the application of some of this black magic today and everything else. There's a lot you've written about this, and of course people, if they want to check out these works, can just pop over to your website and read more about this. You have everything lined up there on the websites, Eric, so let's kind of run through some of the different websites again that you have so people know where to go if they want to read more.
Yeah, the one we're talking about now is called 911nwo.com. Of course, I realized pretty quickly that 911 was a very key event in the kind of push towards New World Order, One World Government. And that's the one where these articles concerning the New World Religion are found, and I'm still adding to it. I've also got a website called naturalclimatechange.us, which I think blows the global warming hypothesis out of the water. I think it's a fraud, it's a scam by the UN again to get us to weaken the industrialized countries by taxing carbon usage. Of course, 85% of our energy comes from burning of fossil fuels. So if you can get people to think that burning of fossil fuels is destroying the planet, then you can get them to believe that we need to regulate our own economic activity. But unfortunately, there's a direct one-to-one correspondence between wealth and energy usage. And since 85% of our energy comes from burning of fossil fuels, if we were to eliminate fossil fuels, which Kyoto Protocol Phase 2 calls for by the year 2050, then we would go back to the pre-industrial era in effect in terms of our wealth and our lifespans and et cetera. So all of this is to deindustrialize the rich countries and to bring in the one world government with the UN as prototypical world government. And then I've got a website called www.waterwatchalliance.us about the local water issues here. And I'll just plug my music website is ericcarlstrom.com.
All right, very good. We're going to have these links up, of course, on our website, folks. You can just find them right there. But, of course, the main one to keep in mind here as we're talking more about this is 911NWO for New World Order.com. All right. Well, Eric, we have much more to talk about. A good conversation here. Stay with us, everybody. Stay with us, Eric, and we'll be right back after a short break.
Please. I've so much to live for.
It's me, you numpty.
Basil!
I knew seeing your faces again would spell trouble.
Wait. How do I know it's really you?
Because I'm the only one who's going to tell you the truth about Newton Haven. Now, do you recall the events of the evening of June the 22nd, 1990?
No, but I know a man who does.
That was the night they arrived. Remember the shooting star? That was them. Nothing happened at first. They were getting ready, burrowing in underground, preparing. Not long after you lot left, people started to change. Just one or two at first, then more. They replaced people of influence, taking over the institutions, remaking, remodeling, refurbishing, doing everything they could to make us join them. It's not like the replacements were evil. Far from it. People got a lot friendlier. That's how they do it. It's not an invasion. It's a merger. They don't want to get rid of us, not if they can help it. They just want to make us more like them. Change the way we think. Bring us into line with all the others. Become another link in their chain. Which is fine, unless you say no. That's when you get replaced. Once they get your DNA, they've got you.
How do they do that?
Any way they like. Blood tests, the nick nurse, sweat, kissing, saliva on the rim of a glass. Why do you think I drink with this crazy straw? Not so crazy now, is it? If you're not on their side, they'll create a version that is. They can bring you back exactly the same, or even make you young again. It looks like you, it even has your memories, but really, it's just a vessel to spread their message. Trust, love, respect, desire. Replaced in the name of progress.
So what happens to the people that get replaced?
The empties. Don't ask me what happens to them.
Why, what happens to the empties?
I told you not to ask me that! Go, get out before it's too late.
Basil?
I said go!
Right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a regular listener, you know that we'll take a short break here and then we'll proceed with more at redicemembers.com, the second hour together with Eric Karlstrom. And when we pick up, we will speak more about today's black magic psychiatry, a field that has truths to it, of course, but horribly misapplied today. From Sigmund Freud's sexology to his nephew, Edward Bernays, the prince of marketing, we'll talk more about how this field is today screwing with people's heads. Eric talks more about the lostness of the mind as people who could stand up to the subversion currently ongoing are basically turned into mindless drones, thinking they're doing the right thing by standing down instead of standing up to all the wrongs in the world. The hierarchy of victim classes has created a new political environment that has now turned very basic fundamental principles like family against itself, where the individuals within it are seeing everything through a lens of rebellion, emancipation, and a struggle against the innate, what they call, fascistic tyranny of the father as the authoritarian personality. That in reality, your loving family is really an imprisonment, not only of the body, but also of the soul, and that you need to rebel against this and break out of this horrible prison. This is a message that we see repeatedly in the entertainment media constantly. And as we proceed, Eric continues to share his insights on the various elements of those competing for the power at the very top of the global criminal network. If you want to hear more of this program or any of our previous ones, go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership and tune in. We have more information and all kinds of helpful directions and instructions on how to listen with your various devices right on the website. It's quick, easy, and well, let's face it, we need to learn and study our enemy if we are to properly understand what is going on and how to change things. So don't miss out. Come on over, stream, download, listen, watch, and comment with our other members. We have more coming up on the program with Richard Spencer, Octavian, Carl Ehrberger, Jeff Gates, Sally Fallon, Greg Alamein, and many more. For now, we say thank you for listening. Second hour coming right up. Stay with us.